Hello, listeners. Just want to give love and support to all the healthcare frontline and essential workers. Please continue to wear a mask, social distance, and please, please don't gather in large gatherings. And speaking of large gatherings, I also want to say please be careful this upcoming week due to the inauguration of Joe Biden. I don't want to see anyone get hurt or any sort of, I guess, rioting of any sort. But please, please be safe. Stay inside if you can. But yeah, enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Freaking Awesome Podcast. It's Sunday, January 17th, 2021. I'm Benjamin Abaya, and joining me today, she is a photographer based in Southern California. She also has her own podcast, How You Doing? Please welcome back Hannah Bernabe.
Hey,
how are you, Hannah?
Glad to be back.
Yes, welcome back.
I'm good.
Yeah, since back, I think listeners would know it is 3 years ago, 2016, or almost 4 years, actually. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I've totally forgot 2020 even just happened. It's 2021. I'm still thinking it's still 2020. So like more than 4 years ago since you were last on.
But I know.
Happy you're back.
Yeah, no. Yeah, thanks so much for having me back. I was trying to think back on that last episode that we did. And I was like, wow, that was 2016. Definitely some opinions about Star Wars have changed since then.
Yeah.
But that's probably for another episode.
And also joining us, she also has her own podcast titled Reclaiming Filipino X Identity. First time guest, please welcome Chachi Abara.
It's nice to be here with you guys and to be in another podcast kind of format.
Yes. So listeners don't know this, but I know your podcast because I listened to a podcast titled This Filipino American Life, and they did like a little shout out to you. So I was like, another Filipino podcast. So let me just listen to that one. And I think both of your guys' podcasts has a similar vibe where you actually just do like sort of like an interview of a person. Usually someone like a friend or a person that you're like look up to. And I really admire that because I always like podcasts where you're just an intimate one-on-one type of feeling.
But yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. So if you're new to the podcast, we usually discuss the things we watched, listened, played, and read throughout the week, and we end it with a main discussion. This week's main discussion is the documentary film, A Thousand Cuts. But before all of that, we have a trailer talk. This week's trailer is Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar.
Hey, Barb.
Yes, Star.
You know what I just love?
What?
Movie trailers.
Me too!
I like how they're little movies about another movie before a different movie.
Sometimes I find myself watching a trailer for a movie while I'm watching a totally different movie.
What? Me too! Barb, what if we had a movie?
What?
Then we'd have to have a trailer.
Oh, yes, listen, I wouldn't want to give anything away, though, about the movie.
Me neither, especially our faces.
Gosh, I can almost see our trailer now.
That was a trailer of Barb and Star Go Vista Del Mar, directed by Josh Greenbaum, written and starring writing partners Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumlolo. On IMDb, this is the premise. A pair of best friends find themselves in over their heads. So a little bit of note of the film was initially supposed to premiere last year in the summer, but now they're skipping the entire like theater experience. So instead, it's going to be released on VOD this coming February.
Other than that, Hannah, what's your thoughts about the, it's actually a teaser trailer. What's your thoughts about the teaser trailer?
I really liked that the whole premise was, you know, it's a trailer where I don't know what's going on. I know it's been a trend, annoyingly so, that the trailer gives away the movie. And it kind of makes me think, well, why would I watch the movie anymore? There's nothing to keep me interested. So I liked how the teaser really wanted to combat that a little bit. Kristen Wiig's character reminds me of how she was in SNL. So I'm really excited to actually see a full-length trailer of this. It's a nice kind of reminder of, you know, Kristen's comedy chops, because she's done a few like serious roles in the last few years, and you know, their most recent one was Wonder Woman. So it's a nice you know,
who I think reminder did a good job in that.
Chris, yeah, I have opinions.
Yeah.
But anyways, so I definitely like that. I'm excited because it is the folks behind Bridesmaids, and I love Bridesmaids. I loved how funny it was. There's so many, you know, comedic scenes that are really at this point classics. So I have no doubt that this is probably going to be, you know, just as funny. I saw Jamie Dornan in there and I was like, okay, so they have like a himbo. Nice.
Yes.
So pretty excited to see where they're going to take this. And I like how they decided to get this as a rental instead of pushing forward and having it as a movie theater. There's a nice safety factor to it that I really like. I know there's a common debate right now of like putting things in movie theaters versus taking them straight to streaming or renting. And I think this is a nice strategy for them to make it rented. So, you know, folks can watch, you know, as long as they want. And yeah, anything comedy for Kristen Wiig, like, I'm for it. I love her.
I think I'm also for it too. How about you, Chachi? What's your thoughts about the trailer?
My thoughts within the trailer itself is like, I guess to being like transparent, like I am still getting used to watching films. So like when I watched the trailer, it kind of gave me a lot of vintage kind of atmosphere. It was very, the way the cinematography was very unique in the way it was made in trailer. Like I never, like mostly in trailers or teasers like this, like you don't really see it this as much. So it's very authentic the way it was trying to highlight the actual film itself. So it was very interesting to me.
Yeah, I think you hit it with the cinematography, because I feel like there's also this aesthetic with it, with how it looks playful, very whimsical. I guess you could say how colorful the trailer looks and how the characters are like kind of wacky, even though you don't see their face as much yet in the teaser trailer. So it's kind of interesting how that's going to play out in the whole film, because I wonder if they shot these scenes just particularly for the trailer, because you don't see their faces. But I am actually in the same boat as you guys with how, like, it's Kristen Wiig and it's Annie Mumole. So they are a great team together. And just seeing them two do another film together is really uplifting in a time like this, I guess you could say. Like, we need good comedies right now, just to allow us to, like, you know, forget some things. But other than that, I think how lighthearted and quirky it is, it reminds me of something I mentioned last week. I don't know if you guys, I want to know your guys', I don't know if you guys know this, but have you ever heard of Nicecore Cinema?
I haven't actually, no.
So it goes, I think someone mentioned online, like how the Paddington film franchise, I don't know if you guys ever watched those films, but how quirky and lovable like the character is. There's like a bunch of films like that. It's not like a new thing happening right now, like a new age of films, but it's basically films that have quirky characters that are put in these like magical plots, I guess, not magical in the sense of like Harry Potter, but like they're not stuck in the real world. And then they through at the end of the film, everyone's like, you know, happy and whatnot. So Paddington always comes to mind because that's a very like lovely film, both of them. So yeah, if I were you guys, researched nice core cinema, I bet you there are a bunch of films that you probably like in that genre. No, I don't think it's a genre of films, but in that core group of films.
Yeah, so, I'll definitely check it out.
Yes, yeah. Have you guys watched Paddington?
I watched the animated version.
Oh, okay.
Of Paddington. Yeah. The live version kind of creeped me out a little bit. It's the same reason why I didn't watch the live version of Winnie the Pooh. It was just too creepy.
Yeah,
for
me. I understand. Something like the
deserves
eyes
to stay. It's the eyes, and it's just some things deserve to be animated and stay animated, in my opinion.
It's totally fine. But yeah, I recommend that. But yeah, so that's Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, which comes out in February 12th, it looks like, here on VOD. So moving on, I just want to know, what have you guys been doing this past week? It could be anything. I'll start with you, Hannah. How have you been doing?
I've been doing well. I recently caved and subscribed to HBO Now. So that has been definitely taking over my free time lately, just exploring what they have to offer. I did watch Wonder Woman, and I watched three or four Studio Ghibli movies now at this point.
What were the movies of Studio Ghibli?
Howl's Moving Castle and Kiki's Delivery Service and Spirited Away. So those are definitely my go-to movies. But I actually saw some movies that I haven't watched lately. Like, I haven't watched Porco Rosso, so pretty excited to watch that.
Yeah.
And I think I watched half of My Neighbor Totoro, so I feel like I need to like rewatched it. So definitely taking full advantage of what the subscription service has to offer. Pretty excited to watch some of the shows that they have, and the movies too. I like how it's more current movies that are popping up on there. So there are things that maybe I missed from the movie theater that I have a chance to watch again in the comfort of my home.
With these Studio Ghibli movies, were they your rewatch of them or first time for some of them?
So that was the first time I watched Kiki's Delivery Service.
Oh, nice.
And Howl's Moving Castle and Spirited Away I've watched multiple times. I've watched both English and Japanese translations. I actually prefer the Howl's Moving Castle in English because I always like saying the fun fact that Howl is voiced by Christian Bale. So Howl
I did
is
not
Batman.
Know that.
Yeah.
Does he use his Batman voice or his British voice?
Like, he uses it's like a softer Batman.
Okay.
Like you could kind of hear the huskiness of it, but it's not the I'm Batman type of thing. So it's nice. And I always like telling that to people. I was like, did you know?
I think I've only watched that in Japanese. So I'm actually going to be in a treat for me to see hear Christian Bale's soft Batman voice. Oh, that character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was that it for like HBO Max?
That's it so far. Well, very happy to take suggestions on what folks think I should watch. I know there's some kind of documentaries that I've been eyeing. Oh, I did watch a true crime documentary sort of to christen my new subscription service. I watched Murder on Middle Beach, and it's a 4-part documentary series. And I give a lot of credit to the director for having the strength to even try to uncover his mother's murder, you know? You know, while trying to grieve and just trying to piece himself together, he decides to create a documentary to find out how his mother was killed.
It is so kind of, yeah, like jarring about how a filmmaker could just do that and still try to create art in a way.
Mm-hmm. But it's a very raw documentary. It definitely, you know, brings up how tragedies like murder can really affect a family for, you know, the rest of their lives. But yeah, I'm a true crime person. So for me, it was a very interesting take on how family members can handle their grief, you know, when someone is taken away so terribly. So
yeah, I think I'm looking forward to watch that too, because I'm into true crime. I think I don't listen to a lot of the podcasts out there, but I do like a good documentary film that tackles that, or a series that tackles it, because I think just being engaged with all that, I know some people think it might be too obsessive to, like, I think people are worried when people get too obsessed about true crime, but I think there's something in us and our, you know, as humans, that we just want to engage with something that what allows someone to do this and see how like a family has to tackle, you know, the grief and whatnot. So yeah, I'm probably looking forward to that too.
Yeah, definitely.
Chachi, are you a HBO Max subscriber? I don't know.
No, I am not. I am just a Hulu and Netflix, and sometimes just watching stuff on YouTube. But I recently, during, because I just recently graduated, I've been watching a lot.
Congratulations.
Yay, you did it.
Thank you. I've been trying to finish some of the series I started on Hulu, which was Superstore.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I've been trying to watch a lot of like series. And like with that, I've been also watching a lot of stuff on Netflix, like a lot of Filipino movies that just came on Netflix, which is the Hello Love Goodbye.
I was going to say, like, would you want to recommend any movies, Filipino movies for us?
Yes, I think I would recommend the Hello Love Goodbye, because it really has the way it was filmed, it was, it has a really great storyline with it, and because the director itself, Kathy Molina, she's a really excellent at really capturing like stories, and I really wanna recommend that movie. It really highlights the role of a lot of OFW or immigrants who's just sacrificing so much to just give to their families and having to like mass. Like this, I'm going through so much, but I need to like make sure that I'm not overburdening myself, kind of thing. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I think we can all relate to that. At least with, you know, we know someone that could relate to that too. Mm-hmm. That's good to hear. I think
Check it out.
Yeah. Like I tend not to watch a lot of, I think when I was younger, my family used to watch a lot of Filipino movies, and a lot of them were very like formulaic, and I just for a long time I like didn't want to watch one, because I felt like it always never went out of the structure of like just drama, several people crying at once and then more drama. So I am always looking forward to like something that breaks. Yeah, oh, what did you say?
Yeah, so Filipino movies gets very corny at times, yeah. But I know it's getting better. There's a lot of rising filmmakers out there.
Yes, there are, yeah. A lot of the melodramas being more tucked away a little bit now. So I don't want to say serious filmmakers, but a lot of filmmakers that are getting ideas outside the box of just the normal melodramatic, you know, typical Filipino stories, I guess you could say. but yeah, thank you for recommending those. I didn't watch a lot. I think I mentioned it to you guys. I read something. so this year, last year, I've always kind of told myself, like, oh, I'm just going to read more over the past couple of years. And I've always read like only like 3 books. I always have this goal to read like 12 books. And that's including like, you know, graphic novels and comic books and everything. But I'm always like stuck with like reading only like 3 or 4 books a year. And this year I will see by the end of this year, I promised myself I was going to read 24 books. And that's just to make up all the books I didn't read the past couple of years. So this week or a couple of weeks ago, I started reading, I think, I don't know if you guys know this book, America is in the Heart, written by Carlos Villazan, huh?
Yay.
Yes.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah. So originally, I wanted this book because my father talked about it a lot when he was in the Philippines. And it's like a book that most Filipinos read in the back in the Philippines. And it's about, and especially if you're from America, he always mentioned it and suggested it. It was gifted to me this past holiday by like my my brother. So I wanted to dedicate myself to read this. I didn't finish the book, but for those who don't know who like Carlos Villazan, he is a prolific like Filipino novelist and poet. I would probably compare him by the way of his writing and just his experience. I haven't read anything aside from this, but from what I've learned about him, he just kind of reminds me of someone like James Baldwin, where like James Baldwin was born in America, but he lived in France for a while and then came back to America. Carlos Villazan did almost exactly the same thing, where he lived in the Philippines, but instead he went to America and he came back to America, it seems like, for a while. I actually don't know like how the book ends, but the book itself is like a semi-autobiography about his journey of him describing his life in the Philippines when he was young and when he immigrated to the States, and he had like had to struggle a lot. I know we're going to mention, we're going to discuss 1,000 Cuts later, but how both of these are related in a way where he is part of that, you know, Filipino diaspora, the where, you know, he came from the Philippines and moved to the United States. So I'm not finished, but I am at the moment thoroughly find it really fascinating. I have this overwhelming level like appreciation for my parents and their sacrifices after reading this, because everything, they did everything to come to the United States for like better opportunities for us. I mean, I came with them too. I was born in the Philippines, but what like now what is happening in the, at least in the United States, the past couple of weeks, especially like the deadly, the insurrection, I guess that's what they call it, insurrection, from like the extremists, the terrorists. It kind of makes you wonder, like, was it worth it? And then I know it's like a rhetorical question at the same time, but I really don't have like an answer at this moment. And I think we're going to discuss it more later with like Maria Ressa's film. And it's like, there's a lot of like nuances and like complexities tackling that question. And it's not easy just to say yes or no, but yeah, but I really right now recommend it. I know Chachi, you read it. What's your thoughts about it?
I read it actually two times. First one was the beginning of the year, and then the second time was for class. And we talked about the struggles of a lot of the Filipino immigrants and what they face. And reading it a second time kind of really made my eyes open with everything that we went through. They went through. And I think it's a book that if you're struggling to kind of like see the bigger picture and like trying to like really look into the history, this book is like a really great start.
Go on. I'm sorry.
I don't want to say anything else because I don't want to spoil it for anyone that didn't read it.
Yes. Yet. He lives an incredible life in the Philippines, and his writing style is very poetic, I guess you could say. Like, it's very, it's not very academic in the sense of like there's not a lot of tough words in there. It's very like well written that anyone could just pick it up and probably not like put it down until they finished it. But from what I've been reading so far, I've been calling like my parents about like, oh, how was it over there? Because I mean, this his life experience is like the first half of the 20th century, so like early 1910s to like the late 50s. So it's fairly different from my parents. But just to see his upbringing, it's kind of opens your eyes. Like, oh wow! Like I understand. Like I have an understanding, especially when we're gonna go to the thousand cuts. Like I have a basic understanding of what's happening in the Philippines right now, but this book is like kind of opened up my eyes a little bit more. But yeah, that's America is in the Heart. I think you can get it anywhere in any bookstores by Carlos Bolasan. So that moves to our main discussion. So our main discussion today is A Thousand Cuts.
So why should you care about what happens in the Philippines? They test the tactics of how to manipulate America in our country. If it works, they port it over to the rest of the world.
Maria Ressa was one of four journalists named as Time Magazine's Person of the Year.
Maria won't be afraid. I'm afraid for her.
What we're seeing is death by a thousand cuts. Little cuts to Philippine democracy. We will not duck. We will not hide. We will hold the line.
That is a clip from the trailer of A Thousand Cuts. It is now playing for free on PBS, and it's part of the Frontline documentary series. So you don't need, I think you do need, I don't know if you need a subscription. I think you can just watch it from their website, actually. It is written and directed by Ramona Diaz. It is a Filipino-American documentary about Maria Ressa, the founder of the online news site Rappler. Before we share our thoughts, I would like to say because it's a documentary film, we'll give minor and probably major spoilers to what is going to happen in the film. So I encourage our listeners to stop listening right now if you haven't watched it. But please, please do watch it because it's an incredible film and I hope you like it. But afterwards, come back and then unpause the episode and continue about our thoughts. I'll start with you, Hannah. What's your thoughts? I have a couple of questions. Have you heard of Maria Ressa? And what's your thoughts about the film and what's going on in the Philippines at this very moment?
So I heard Maria Ressa's name kind of floating around online right when President Duterte became president. Usually when I try to get news from home, I try to get my news in a very unbiased way. So even if it doesn't paint the country in a great light, at least it's the truth. At least it's the news.
Yes, yeah.
So that's how I stumbled upon Rappler and hearing Maria Ressa's name. So, you know, I, you know, followed her close enough, you know, and I found out that she was Time's Person of the Year. And when I found out about, you know, the charges that were the charges against her, definitely was trying to take a closer look at that. So when I watched the movie, I think I was bracing myself to see how 2016 to 2020 is for our country, and definitely reminded me that, you know, the things that were going on back home is a little eerily familiar to things that were going on here. And I know she talks about it in the film of why that similarity is coming to light, but yeah. It was definitely a lot to take in. I think I had to pause a few times just to kind of reflect on what I just watched.
And then yeah, that's exactly how I was, especially when their lives are being threatened, I was like, I don't know if I want to continue because I don't want to see anyone die in this film right now.
Yeah. For me, it was also interesting that the director focused on the female journalist. Aside from Mia Ressa, I think it was Pia and Patricia.
Yes.
Those two journalists, I give them so much credit for just hanging on to their convictions and their beliefs to, you know, practice real journalism. One of the other takeaways that I saw was the film was painting two different sides of women. So there's the Maria Ressas of the world, and then there's the Mocha Usan.
Yes, yes.
I think that's her last name. So that was very interesting to witness as well. Like, it was weird because it felt like I was watching The Hunger Games in terms of how the broadcasting was and social media. And I know they touched upon Facebook and, you know, Facebook's influence on broadcasting information. So
it's interesting because I forgot the name of the documentary film that came out last year about social media and how basically how misinformation started because of, you know, they were not regulating it on social media. So people, mm-hmm. especially hackers and people who were just spreading it all over the place, were not being checked. So that's why we have this problem. And then how Maria Ressa like talked about that and how like it starts with countries that are a bit poorer than the United States. That's how they start, because they want to test it out with people who might not know better. And I'm like, that's interesting because they test it on people, especially people of color, she also mentioned, but then seeing how that misinformation spreads through their country. I was like, oh, wow. Mm-hmm. How about you, Chachi? Do you know, how well you know about Maria Ressa and Rappler, and what's your thoughts about the film?
I knew Maria Ressa through Ate Ruby or Ruby Ibarra, through the song. That was when I was introduced.
Yes, she does the theme song for this.
Yes, and then from there on, I researched, like, who is Maria Ressa? And I found out, like, she was a journalist from Rappler. And I asked a few close friends that are from the Philippines, and they told me about what was happening. And it kind of, like, really, the truth kind of came out, is that being a journalist in the Philippines is one of the most dangerous thing in the whole world, because you don't really get much freedom. You're kind of, what you're writing is really controlled by the government, and only some of them really gets their word out. And it's hard for them. And I think this documentary itself, like, it kind of shows a lot of hard-hitting truth that I think people need to wake up to, the reality that many people in the Philippines have a hard time trying to really, like, get their word out, because you don't know if you will get kind of censored in a way, because they really don't have that press freedom that we have, fortunately, here.
Yeah, exactly. When she talks about it in the film, where I think it's, I forgot, is it Pia who was facing Duterte one-on-one, and then he basically threatened them in their face, like, about, like, you know, that he would kill them if, or no one would, like, trust them too. Like, there was, like, all these threats towards them. And in my mind, I'm like, this is not, I mean, we see parts of that, not like a threat here in the United States where it comes to our lives, but we see some of that here with the last administration. I guess you could say they're the last one, from Trump's administration. So seeing those parallels here is like, oh, wow. So they are going through the same thing, but I feel like they're not equipped with the tools to combat it. Like they're not, the Philippines are not equipped with everything that at least the United States have when it comes to like the freedom of press. Like there's no one accountable over there. It seems like it seems like the politicians there are so corrupted. I guess you could say like they don't even care about like the journalists there too. Do you have anything else to add? Chachi, I'm sorry.
I think Hannah kind of brought it up, like the two focus of the two women, especially when like I think halfway through the film, like there was the Mocha and the two journalists, and it kind of played like there is always two sides within these things, and it's trying to like the truth kind of like when you're gathering like Filipinos, it's hard because people will be swayed into one thing. So it was very interesting to see the Mocha supporters and the anti-Mocha supporters.
They also, like, because you're mentioning the different sides, they also mentioned the politicians that were at play here too. Like, I don't know, they called them the 12. I think there were 12 Senate seats that were available. And I think one side was favoring Duterte and the other sides were the opposition. I think they were called the opposition, I guess. And seeing what happened, what plays out later on, like how they all lost, they don't gain any seats, the opposition. And that there's just this continuation of Duterte's like reigning party. I don't know. It just seems very like there's no fairness to it. There's no checks and balance whatsoever there right now. So it feels like anyone could just do anything. But I was going to mention because I've mentioned that the parallels to like Trump and Duterte and how Mocha was on here, Mocha Usan. It reminded me kind of Tommy Lauren. I don't know if you guys follow, I don't follow her, but do you know of her, how she's part, I think, the Fox News channel where she speaks highly of Trump, and whatever she says, it feels like she's just spreading more disinformation. So it's I see those parallels where you have a woman, especially an attractive woman who is young and that has this platform, but also abusing the platform too. it's just interesting that they both have that. And then the another parallels is, like I mentioned, like, there are loyal politicians for Duterte, like here in Trump, where I think his name is Bato de la Rosa, who was like Duterte's like director general of the corrections, who then later runs for Senate. And I feel like that's exactly what's happening here before. And then you, once again, you also have like both of them have followers who have misinformed or misguided. And then they have both have trolls that would incite hate or violence, and spreading the hate and violence, especially misogynistic hate and violence, like how the things they say to Maria Ressa in the social media, and how like she has 90 threats an hour, I think she said, in social media. So it's like, it's literally thousands of threats a day probably too. But yeah, mm-hmm. I just found it very informative, and I just felt very like, wow, I knew there was something wrong, but I didn't realize how bad it was for the press over there. Do you guys have anything else you guys want to mention? I was curious about how your guys' thoughts when it comes to the way they do their politics versus how we, the United States at least, do theirs when it comes to like this overwhelming support. I mean, I guess they're almost the same, like the support to one certain politician. What are your guys' thoughts about that, what they do with politicians? How about you, Hannah?
I actually saw so many similarities between Duterte and Trump from, you know, they were both elected around the same time. They have the same tactics on reach to their supporters. They both use kind of a nationalist, populist way of instilling fear in people to get their support. And for me, in terms of, you know, the political structure of it, it was just very eerie, because I know Maria Ressa, she mentioned it, how whatever happens in the States, it carries over to the rest of the world. And it made me think about how, you know, for the last 4 years, there's been a global shift to a far right government. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, it was in Brazil, the Philippines, the United States, and it all started when Trump came to office. And it, you know, if you wanted to go even deeper than that, it starts with people who are just fed up with how politicians were handling things. You know, granted, there were a few things that were happening behind the scenes that people didn't want to understand. Like a quick example is, you know, a lot of people blame Obama, but Obama had a red House of Reps and a red Senate. So yeah, it was very hard for him to get through things because checks and balances existed in the Obama years, I suppose. So in terms of, you know, the political structure, like there is just an eeriness where globalization and the American stronghold on global politics is so strong that even a very negative time period, it just reverberated, you know, in other countries, especially countries like the Philippines that were heavily influenced by the American military. So I think the only difference is just, you know, in the Philippines, it's just much more dangerous. It's a little bit kind of like a Wild West type of mentality. You know, it's not as structured. There isn't a strong adherence to, you know, democratic things like the Constitution and things like that. So in some ways, it's like the Philippines in terms of, you know, upholding the theory of democracy. They are still, you know, well on their way, and they're, you know, still experiencing things that probably we hopefully, knock on wood, will never experience here.
Yeah.
You know, but what I actually found in was the whole idea of war on drugs. It reminded me that the United States also had their own war on drugs during the Reagan era.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, like the main difference is just the war on drugs in the Philippines, it's just way bloodier. Whereas the war on drugs here, I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, racial and generational legacies that were, you know, still happening till this day. But in the Philippines, it was just like, you know, I think they mentioned, about 20,000 people have died. Yes. And this, you know, like this documentary was, you know, probably started in 2018, I think. So I'm sure there's unofficial numbers. I know that those came from human rights advocates. But, you know, this whole idea of like putting unquote war on drugs on people to assert control on a population. And it's always kind of like the same criteria, like they would have to be poor. They would have to be mostly young men. And, you know, it's usually to, you know, get people to agree on something. I haven't lived in the Philippines in a very long time. I left when I was 12, but even when I was very young, I knew that drugs was a big problem in the Philippines. And, you know, it's going to be a constant debate with people if this was the right way to do it. I remember it was at the end of the film too, where like this older lady who didn't see herself as a victim and actually saw herself as someone who was, you know, reaping the benefits of what President Duterte is giving to her. I think she even mentioned that like her retirement increased.
Is better, yeah.
You know, in the, yeah, and is better. And Maria Ressa countered it with that Holocaust quote. And, you know, it's sort of like the idea of unchecked power. He, you know, President Duterte, he's an unchecked power, in my opinion. And that reverberates through misinformation and all of these things. So in terms of politics and political structure, it's just a much more kind of unsettling example that what we do in the United States will affect the rest of the world. And if our political leaders can just go back to history a little bit, then maybe it won't happen again. So.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you just said. Yeah, like the poem that she mentioned is called First They Came by Martin Niemöller. And it is, to end the film with that poem, it makes you realize that, yeah, there's, although they feel like they're benefiting from it, it's still not right. Like it's still, and how do we know that Duterte won't go after you, like after the drug dealers or the drug people with substance abuse and whatnot, who is he going to go after next? And we just don't know. And it seems like he's going to go after the journalists, it seems like, next in the film. Mm-hmm. How about you, Chachi, like what's your thoughts about the politics in the Philippines right now?
As of right now, like, because I always have this conversation with a few group of friends and I, and like, we agreed like the politics in the Philippines is a little bit, I guess, biased, because when it comes to president-wise and how they are elected, you have to be already in the family, in the system, like internally, like you have to be passed on by family. And I feel like there is already something wrong with that, because, and if not that, people pay for you to get your votes.
And yes, I heard about that.
And it's kind of like already there's a lot of things that's wrong already. And it's just with everything that I think Hannah said so much, but I was trying to keep up. We kind of had similar wavelengths, but at the same time, I think I really wanted to emphasize the point you brought up about like how what's happening in the Philippines is really happening all over the world. And I think it's just a remarkable kind of way to describe it, is that people tend to like not look at what's happening in the Philippines, and no one knows that what's happening there is actually happening everywhere. And when things just like happen, like what happened to in the US, it's like, oh, they act like it never happened before, but it did. And it's just like really taking a look at what's happening around us, because that's kind of like how we will fix, or not fix, but kind of see that there are patterns in what's going on with the world, especially when it comes to politics, because politics is a pretty messy and complicated thing that's talked about.
Yeah, like hopefully things are getting better. I don't know yet. We'll see in the next couple of years. I know Duterte is there until 2022, I believe. I think next year is their election. Listeners don't know, in the Philippines, presidents have 6-year terms, but they are not allowed to run again. So after that, he's not allowed to run. But from what I watch in the film, it seems like the daughter or the son might be running next, and you continue this dynasty of the Duterte's family and whatnot. But yeah, before we leave, like, I think all of us here live in the United States, and like I said, mentioned that we're part of like that Philippine diaspora. I can speak a lot for our guests, but I know we all like migrated here with our families and whatnot. I do have relatives that live there at the moment, and a lot of them are for Duterte. A lot of them see the benefits of him, and I'm always curious, and I always discuss these things with some of them about it and whatnot, and they're very passionate about like him still, and they don't, it feels weird, because I believe them, like how they like they're good people. I don't want to throw that around, but they're my relatives, and I think it's the cost of the lives of the people who are in the middle of the drug war, I don't think they see them as like people. And that's sad to say. And I've hopefully the next couple of years, they be a little bit more compassionate about that, because especially this movie, I hope they do watch it over there. I don't know if PBS is available there or this film is going to be available there, but yeah. So hopefully they could overcome that. Then at least the atrocities that is committed by that administration. But yeah, so that is the film A Thousand Cuts. It is available on PBS at the moment. Thank you again for this discussion. I really love this because it's hard to find people for our podcast. I mean, I was going through like who was our old guest, and then Chachi, because your podcast is basically about the Filipino ex identity. That's why I wanted you to come here, and Hannah, because you're Filipina, that you're I also wanted you to come back here to be a guest too. But before we leave, I just want to ask you guys, starting with Hannah, please describe your podcast and how can they listen.
Sure. My podcast is the How Are You Doing podcast. It is a podcast project, so it will actually be over in the next, I think by the end of the month. I have a couple episodes left. But in short, it was just me reaching out to my friends and my community members on how they are doing and handling the pandemic. And I've been really blessed to have an amazing network. We have someone on there that was a nurse. We have someone coming up who is a small business owner, who's a very dear friend of mine. So it was kind of like a human exploration in form of and it was a nice, you know, it was a nice change of pace for me. As mentioned earlier, I am a photographer, but you can take a listen to the How You Doing podcast anywhere, Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to these things, we'll be there. So yeah.
Thank you. I've listened to almost all of them. I did, for some reason, I skipped to the end, and I liked how you bookend at least the last set of episodes with the same person, because you wanted to see how they're doing during the pandemic.
The last maybe I think three episodes that I've done, it was kind of a revisit to different people, and it was mostly because they are people that I talk to very consistently, and we all acknowledge that the pandemic has changed us immensely. Out of the episodes that I recorded, they were recorded I would say April or May. So those three people, they have grown and blossomed, and their lives have been just changed in the 6 months. And I thought, you know, why not, you know, dedicate some airtime for them, just to kind of show that, you know, we are in a period of stasis, but there is room to grow if you are called to grow. You know, if you are, you know, told to stay home and wait this out and, you know, be as safe as possible, do that. And, you know, the folks that I have interviewed, some of them, like I mentioned, you know, they are frontliners, or they're creatives that don't really have a choice. We have to work in order to pay the bills. So it's a nice exploration of, I would say, kind of how humans cope. So pretty bummed that I decided that, you know, after the last few episodes, it'll be the end. But some projects have their time to shine, and this is definitely one of them.
So. Yeah, I agree too. But yeah, I highly recommend it. How about you, Chachi? How about describe your podcast and where can they find it?
Yeah, so I have a podcast and I started last year in February, and it's called Reclaiming Filipino Identity. And basically this podcast came out of my wanting to learn more about the different Filipino experience here in Hawaii, as well as interviewing some of my peers. And actually now in season 5, I am interviewing a lot of activist professors and a lot of lawyers who are Filipino, who are teaching Filipino here in Hawaii, and especially in the University of Hawaii at Manoa, to hear about their experiences, because I value storytelling and being able to really have your voices out there. And with that, I also have a second podcast on the YouTube, which is the Mental Health Kwentuhan Sessions, and where I just bring 3 to 4 Filipinos from different places in the States and even in Canada to just talk about taboo topics in our community. And this is just a way for us to just have open space and safe space to talk about things that we normally won't talk in the dinner table.
Oh, I didn't know about your YouTube. I think I'll check that one out too.
I'll definitely check that out as well.
I'm a fan of yours too, because I like how there's an array of different Filipino X experiences that you have in your podcast. And mm-hmm. I really appreciate that, because it goes from like young folks to like older folks to different professions to students. I'm looking forward for more episodes. Once again, thank you for joining me and the podcast. Before we leave, we come up with this list. This is really quick. You mentioned one thing, but we come up with this list. It's called the Freaking Awesome List of 2021. We have lists since back in 2016, but we always try to ask our guests to include one thing you think is awesome. It could be anything. It could be a person. It could be a film you just watched. It could be a show. It could be a book. It could be anything. It could be a flower that you saw on growing from a cement or something that you really think is awesome. So I'm going to start with you, Hannah, really quick. What's one thing you want to put on the list?
One thing that I really want to put on the list is the Queen's Gambit. I loved that Netflix series. I'm even gushing right now in my brain just thinking about how much I love the Queen's Gambit. But it's just a nice exploration of, you know, the chess world and how it's a female chess master, and you don't really hear that often. And on top of the Netflix show, I also started reading the book, which explores the character Beth Harmon's, you know, road to genius and addiction a lot more. So
that is the first on the list, Queen's Gambit. So I'll be honest, I watched a couple episodes. I liked it, but it didn't want me to watch more. But a lot of friends told me the first couple episodes are like the not the best, but they said like throughout everything else is like better than the first two episodes. So I'm going to give another try though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about you, Chachi?
Oh, one thing exciting 2021. It would be to check out this album. It's everywhere in Netflix. Oh, no, not Netflix. Oh my gosh. It's a music. It's on Spotify, iTunes, and now on Amazon, but it's called Kavili album. And this is actually came out recently, the last few weeks ago, and it's a Filipino Hawaiian album. And the really great thing about this is some of the songs were translated from Ilocano, Visayan, Tagalog, and Hawaiian. And it just shows a lot of how the stories between Filipinos and Hawaiians within the future of Hawaii itself. And I really like want to recommend this album and the songs. It has really, like, when I listened to it the first time, I cried. It's that great, and it really kind of emphasized so much parallel within the history with Filipino and Hawaii, and how we are always like trying to help, especially each other. And but yeah, it's Kavili, and it's on Spotify, Apple iTunes, and Amazon, and on Melle.com if you wanted to buy an album, because proceeds will go to our Ilocano department, as well as the UH Law School, Immigration and Refugees.
As a fellow Ilocano, I will support that.
Same, I too.
Oh, we're
I'm also Filipino. Yes, we're all Ilocano.
We should start a podcast called Ilocanos.
That would be great, actually.
We'll link up again later. But thank you for adding that to the list. So those two will be on our list. We have, after those two, we have 19 more things to, we're going to keep on adding some more stuff throughout the year. So looking forward to that. So where can they find you on social media, Hannah?
You can find me at Instagram. So I'm pretty active on there. My handle is at hbphotos.co. I'm also on Twitter. Yeah, just my name, Hannah Bernabe. And that's really kind of the two main kind of social media platforms I'm chilling at these days. So,
how about you, Chachi?
Well, you can find me at my Instagram, which is Maria Chachi at, and also on our Instagram for our podcast, Reclaiming Filipinx Identity. And I'm pretty active in both as well. So see you guys there.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you again for joining me. Thank you for the listeners. You could find me on Benjamin Abaya on both Instagram and Twitter. You could find more episodes of the Freaking Awesome podcast on Twitter and Instagram at TFA Now. We have a Facebook group. I don't think we are active in that group because I don't have Facebook. So my twin brother is more managing that Facebook, but I don't think he also goes on Facebook. But anyway, it's called The Freaking Awesome. You can join our Discord server. Link is on the show notes. Please subscribe, rate, leave a comment on iTunes or Google Play. If you have any concerns, comments, or corrections, please email us at contacts@thefreakingawesome.com. Once again, we're going to have a Patreon page coming probably the next couple of weeks. We're still putting it together, but please look out for that. Please support us. Finally, you can find us on thefreakingawesome.com. I think I mentioned it earlier too. I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm Hannah Bernabe.
And I'm Chachi Abaya.
And that has been the Freaking Awesome podcast.